And you are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, the station that loves you. This is Felicia and Marshall with Kauai Soapbox. In the studio with me right now, I have Carl Imperato, president of the Hanalei, Hanalei
Tahaena
Community Association, and Mason Chalk is going to be on the show with us a little bit later, and we're going to have a really great show today with a range of topics, mostly local, some global, and right now I'd like to say that Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with the Kauai Store and Betty Jean Nativio.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
The Kauai Store is located in Kapa'a on the highway in front of Kostilas. The store has authentic Kauai products including clothing, snacks, art, coffee, crafts, and more. We even have local food samples. The Kauai Store products are also available online at thekauaistore.com.
Betty Jean Nativio, artist for hire, teaching both art and cooking, including the School of Chocolate Art for all ages and abilities. Multi-art mediums, including reverse glass painting, available for events, signage, custom gifts, and more. More information at bettyjeannativio.com or 808-652-3781.
Keala nuukia KKCR. O KKCR ka hui leki o ku o ko ano kawai. He hui leki o kayaulu, e pai pai ia e ka lehu lehu a e ho'o lele ana me ka ho'o laha ole. Nā pahu hopu a KKCR. Helu e kahi. E ho'o ulu i ka hoe, e a o aku, a e ho'o hau oli ho'i i nā hoa ho'o lohe. Helu e lua. E mālama, e ho'o mau, a e ho'o lau le apu i nā mea a me ka nohona Hawaii. Helu e kolu. Ho ike i ka nani ākea i kō kāko kaiaulu a me ke kaiaulu kū waho. He kahua o KKCR no nā leo a me nā mele laha loa pū no me ka laha ole. O Keke Kahu Foundation, ka mea e ho'oholo ai i a mau papahana leki o.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. That was our mission statement. And so deep in our mission statement is to give voice to the underserved population, and certainly to be strengthening our native Hawaiian population, whether that's with a capital N or a little N, however it is, our host culture here, part of the core elements of KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea. So, Carl.
Hello.
Hi. Thank you for all that you do, and we ran into each other today at the Planning Commission meeting, and it's always pretty powerful what happens there. Very often it's poorly attended. Today had a pretty strong attendance. I saw today, and I like there was a number of things on the agenda. Many people were in there for the general plan update.
That's right.
Yeah, and I think that like what was extra on there is there has been an upzoning of the land between Princeville Airport and and Anini, where that has been agriculture lots, and they want to turn that into a resort districting. So that's pretty fresh on the changes that they're making. So there was a number of people in there for that topic.
Right. If I could clarify that, too, because it's not technically an upzoning. What's happened is that land, which is basically land above Anini, you know, the eastern part of the Princeville Plateaus there, that land is zoned county, ag, and open. And it always has been. Since about the 1980s, in the 1980 general plan and the successive general plans, in terms of future land use concepts, that land has been designated as future resort. So it's not zoned resort currently.
Mm.
The existing general plans have basically said we envision it to become resort in the future once the developer goes to the State Land Use Commission and the county to get the zoning changed. So it's part of the vision that would be resort. And what's happened now with the current general plan is that when the first draft came out in November, the proposal was to say that it's no longer in the county's vision to have that be resort. We've got so much going on already. We've got 3,000 tourist units already approved but not yet built around the island.
So let's contemplate that for just a minute. 3,000 that are already approved, meaning that's called an entitlement, that they can build that, 3,000. And do some of those include what is under construction in the Kapa'a area, or is it in addition to that?
Right, it includes what's under construction also. Okay. It's 3,000 plus there. And then there's other land, other places, you know, in the visitor destination areas that haven't yet been approved. So when you add it all up, there's probably closer to 4,000 more units that can be added on the island just under the existing visitor destination areas. Now, that's on a base of about 10,000 units that we have. So that's like a 40% increase, more or less.
And mostly people don't travel all by themselves. It's more often two than one.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the average is. Sometimes people are traveling with a child or two, but...
It's probably two to three people per unit.
2 to 3 people per unit. So that is raising the potential between maybe 6 to 12,000.
Right. Well, when you think about it, right now we're probably averaging about 25,000 tourists a day on island over the year. It's lower during certain months, 10% lower, like in a month like May, and it's about 10-15% higher in months like June and July. But on the average, it's about 25,000 people. And that's basically a 25% or so increase that we've had since 5 years ago, or since 2010. And the impacts of that have been enormous. I mean, you sense the frustration level around the island, the frustration about going along the east side. Here in the North Shore, we have problems, coming in from Hanalei today. It took me an extra 15 minutes.
To go 3 miles.
To go over the bridge, right. And that was not a problem 5 years ago. That was not a problem 3 years ago. What's changed between then and now? Not that they have population growth, but basically the number of tourists on island has increased by about 25%. And not only is that sort of an inconvenience, but when you think about the fact that the North Shore from Hanalei through Haena is in a tsunami evacuation zone, there's a true safety issue there. And so right now, we've seen this 25% increase over a five-year period. And going back to the numbers that we were talking about, if we have a 40% increase, potentially, in the number of tourist units on the island, that would be another 40% increase in the number of tourists. And we're already seeing that the infrastructure, not only on the east side, but on the North Shore and probably other parts of the island, can't handle it. And it's not only a convenience issue, but it's a safety issue.
And when we're talking infrastructure, we mean roads, sewage, rubbish, parks.
Right, parking at the parks, a whole bunch of things. And, you know, the unfortunate thing is a lot of times people think in terms of the hard infrastructure. You know, we have county tourism strategic plan, which is really another plan for more boosterism when you come right down to it. But even that plan acknowledged that when the number of tourists on island exceed a number roughly like 25,000 on the average, that tends to create a bad visitor experience and make things worse for the locals. And their basic solution to that is, in essence, well, if you can build more transportation capacity, whether it's more roads or buses or whatever it is, then you solve your problem. And that kind of infrastructure is really only one part of the infrastructure that we need to be thinking about. We need to be thinking about the soft infrastructure, the fact that you can't just basically say if we had more roads, more
parking
more buses, and we could have more and more tourism, because what would happen is you'd have more and more crowding at the beaches. People are very concerned, I know, in the North Shore area, that they're being more and more crowded out of places like Makua because there are more and more tourists and tour groups, you know, basically using up the resource there. So there are some resources, some types of quote-unquote infrastructure that you cannot increase. And so it's kind of deceptive to think only in terms of infrastructure as the Kauai Tourism Strategic Plan thinks. So going back to where we started about the Princeville Plateau, one thing that the general plan proposes, and it's really not very much of a proposal, is to say that we should not allow more tourist accommodations to be developed outside the visitor destination area. Well, hold on. We've already talked about there's almost 4,000 units that could still be built. But at least if you're saying don't expand it, well, that's at least a slightly positive thing. But here now we come to the county's vision in the 1980 and the 2000 general plans that basically say, in the future, let's allow the visitor destination to expand onto the eastern part of the Princeville Plateaus. And that's what's in the existing general plan. So in the November draft of the general plan, the preliminary draft, the one thing the county did do, the one positive thing, is to say that they want to remove that vision that the visitor destination area will expand into the eastern part of Princeville. And they wanted to remove that concept from the future land use map. Now, again, that land is not designated as resort at this point, but the vision is that in the future it could be. And by having this in the future land use map, then the Princeville developers could go to the State Land Use Commission and say, see, the county's envisioned that in the future this can be a resort, and so please state, rezone this statewide as urban, and please county, rezone this as resort. So, you know, the first state in stage in all of this is to, you know, have your land use map for the future have the area zone, not zoned, designated as future resort. And so the argument that's going on right now is that in November the county said, let's take that out because we've got more than enough tourist accommodation space here. And what's happened, though, is that since the November draft in January, because the developer pushed back, the words were changed to basically say, well, what we'll do is we'll give the developer 5 more years to go and get his zoning changed at the state and the county levels.
Mm.
And then in the draft that's out today says, well, we'll give the developer 10 more years to go and get the zoning changed. So basically, it's been a retreat from what was a positive acknowledgement, which is that the vision for 2000 is outdated. And it's been a retreat from that to basically say, let's allow this area to be converted to resort usage. And that's the issue that's going on right there.
Well, I want to speak for just a moment to place it in context for the listeners who weren't there. There was standing room only today in the meeting. There was people outside. I saw at least, I kind of counted 10 expensive lawyers in there, with all due respect to that community, about half of whom, have been, if not the planning director, on the planning team, staff, before. So that's the thing that's really difficult, is the people with a lot of money are able to bring in, you know, the heavy hitters who know the system well. We have a caller. Let's take that real quick. Aloha. Thank you for holding. You're on the air.
Aloha, Felicia. It's Maka'ala. I just left the Planning Commission.
Okay.
And they voted to leave the map in, leave everything as is.
So make that clear for
me. For the Princeville Plateau.
That means that they are going to leave it to be resort, going to be, or
well, it's
make
not
it really
exactly
clear.
Resort. It's not exactly resort, but it means that the process is the same as it was, that the landowner would apply to the LUC.
Land Use Commission?
And it could be developed. Yeah, right. So nothing has changed.
Mm.
Commissioner Ahuna tried a motion to remove the map,
Wow. Which
would have changed the process and would have put that developer in the same situation as any other developer and have to go through the same process and not have this leg up that Carl is talking about. But that motion failed, and so
Wow. Everything
is status quo.
Wow. Hmm. You know, thank you for calling that in. I'm disappointed to hear that. I was about to say I was very touched by the testimony that came out in the discussion today. I felt we had very powerful testimony from the multi-generational community that is here, both from the Hawaiian community as well as a very poignant point with one member of our younger community talking about her great-grandfather coming over in chains from China. There was powerful, moving testimony. I thought for sure they wouldn't do that. When you were watching...
Well, I think the forces in place are that there was nobody... They felt commissioners expressed the opinion that they weren't sure what the developer's position was. There was nobody representing the developer in the room. They have not received testimony from the landowner. They felt as though as poignant and touching as the testimony from the community and the native people of the place was, that they have to have a balanced view, and there was no other view expressed.
D. Kroll was there. Did he not speak?
Yeah, he didn't.
I mean, like, when I look at how many attorneys were in that room, that, you know, I'm not calling them sharks, but I mean, that was well represented.
Well, there was nobody spoke to, we do have a master plan. This is what we want to do with the land. You know, this has been in two iterations of the general plan. So what the commissioners heard during the final motion argument was, this has been the status of this land for two iterations of the general plan. What we're calling for is 10 years.
Boy.
Remain the same, use it or lose it. One commissioner did ask, you know, is there a plan for this property? And there's nobody to respond to that question. So, you know, the one thing that one commissioner said that shocked me, and I'm going to follow up, was that the North Shore needs more services, more infrastructure. And when you have a development, that's how you get that stuff paid for. And I'm unaware that we've asked for any additional infrastructure, nor do we need any more services, but that's just me. I've heard this opinion from people in that area before, and I don't ever have them identify exactly what it is we're missing, but we know that's true. You know, sometimes that's the win-win that you get when a development goes in, is you get other stuff you needed. But I'm not aware of anything that we need in that place except for that place to be left alone and available.
I felt like what Mehana Vaughn had to share when she was talking about the Limu and also Billy Kinney. I'm just going to give some credit to some of these people. Was very powerful of the changes that happened in the estuary and the reef area, the lagoons of the reef down there at Anini, seen after the development of the golf course. And then as the traditional families are all being pushed out and they don't want to be pushed out, I think it was so powerful. I felt like Uncle Rupert's commentary was particularly profound and important given what's going on in Wailua. There were so many elements. I didn't think they would just let that go like that. And when I looked at who all was in the room, there was a lot of representation, I would say, of what would be Princeville.
Well, I think there's no, I don't see that kind of value and quality in this general plan. Specifically in the specifics of it. There's a few generalized statements in the front of it and so forth, but we're not seeing any response to any of our comments. We're not seeing any changes to any of our suggested changes and edits. We're not seeing the effect of our participation. And what I heard today was, well, yeah, but it's only you guys. Well, you know, there's five different ways to participate. You don't have to come down there. So I don't know what the problem is, but I'm concerned that the process is not Pono. And we all know that Pono process gets Pono product. You almost can't avoid it. So when the process is not Pono, you get this kind of imbalance and frustration and lack of vision. So, you know, that's what we have. But
well,
thanks for taking my call, and I'm glad I could give you that update, and I'm very sorry that it was the kind of update that it was.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing
You're
that.
Welcome.
Aloha.
You're welcome. Aloha.
So, Carl, the elephant in the room to me is the fact that our tax structure is set up in a way where certain people pay a whole lot, like non-resident is that your phone? Non-resident investors pay a whole lot of rent or of real property tax. And so when we have, maybe the county is compelled to, be doing this non-resident investor approvals because, sorry, I was a little distracted by the phone. Everybody's hearing that. Okay, sorry, everybody. Because I, you know, it's like I can't understand why all these things keep getting told yes. You know, we are exhausting what we have here for everybody. The visitors are on a bummer. They're grumpy. They're growly. I know, like, I went to go see my son play some music. I had to check all 5 parking lots in Hanalei. And I finally got a place to park when somebody not well parked moved out. I mean, and this is May. This was a week ago. And so in the middle of May, which is not prime season, to not even have a single place to park, that's a pretty rough space. Mm-hmm. Okay, we have a caller. Aloha, you're on the air.
Hey, aloha. I just wanted to make sure I understood what the previous caller just said, because it didn't make any sense to me. So here's what I heard her say. All of the people who live here and have lived here for generations and know and understand the place and can see and observe what is happening, those people's views were balanced with rich and powerful people who never presented their views.
Right, they weren't present. Carl?
So how is that balance when you balance something with nothing? I'm utterly perplexed by that.
Let's hear Carl.
A little bit on the process. As you mentioned, D. Crowell, who represents the Princeville developer, did testify,
there.
And he testified at previous meetings on the general plan. And you get to sort of the what's going on below the surface, right? I mean, half of the former planning directors now are working for developers.
As attorneys for them.
And half of the county attorneys who used to represent the county in planning areas now work for the developers as well. So there are a lot of backdoor channels through which these other views are expressed and seem to carry the day.
Yeah, that was pretty heavy because as I looked around the room and saw how many nice suits and knowing which very capable people are filling those suits and who they work for, I was surprised that they didn't speak.
You know, it's sad in the sense, too, that we can't even discuss facts anymore. It's one thing to disagree about what you should do in the face of a problem, but the general plan doesn't even acknowledge what the problems are.
So can you start there? Can you basically share your testimony that you spoke on? Because you gave some figures, and I don't know if you brought it with you, but your testimony was powerful. That's why I asked you to come in.
Yeah, well, in terms of the figures, you know, the tourism grew at a rate of 4.6% a year between 2010 and 2015. That's like a 25% increase, 4.6% a year. When you look at what the general plan is projecting for the next 20 years until 2035, they project that the growth rate's going to go to 1/11th of what it has been, 0.4% a year. So we've had 25% growth over a 5-year period. They projected over the next 20-year period, there'll only be another 8.5% growth. Now, this is clearly absurd. It makes no sense, but why? And we've testified to that effect, at least 3 or 4 times, and there's no change at all. The visitor count that we experienced in 2016, if you go to the graphs in the general plan forecast, is not supposed to happen until 2025. If we have 2 more years of growth like we've had recently, we will be at the 2035 projected growth for visitors.
So we're not having an honest conversation.
Right. So that's really the first problem. It'd be one thing to basically say, we agree on some reasonable set of forecasts, and then what do we do about it? But basically, there's this elephant in the room, and what the planning department is treating it as if it's just a mouse. It's not there. And so we can't really do anything. It's hard to discuss what needs to be done in the face of a problem when you don't even acknowledge the problem exists. And it's not like this is anything new. I mean, the 1984 general plan ordinance called for conditioning approvals on the adequacy of infrastructure and not approving beyond certain limits. That was 1984. Now, nothing happened then. 2000 general plan, the biggest controversy was over the growth forecasts and the concerns about that. Nothing really happened then. Between 2000 and 2008, most of those 3,000 units that I said were approved but not yet built were approved. And Planning Commission didn't listen to any of the testimony that people raised about infrastructure and other concerns. And so in 2008, we ran a charter amendment to try to at least deal with the growth in tourist accommodations, and that passed by a 2-to-1 majority. But in that time, since that time, even though there's a pretty clear mandate from the voters that they're concerned about this, the county has not altered one policy in terms of trying to mitigate or manage the growth of tourism. When you look at the current general plan, the only thing it says is, well, we're going to manage this by basically trying to keep the new tourist accommodations within the visitor destination area.
So what do you think it is? You know, to me, I feel like it is that the visitor and development industry is the feeding trough of which the state and the county run off of. And when I watch the development elements, the development is at a price that people who live within this economy can't afford. So we are basically developing to sell to people who are from somewhere else. And I, you know, I'm totally admit it. When I came in 1984, I was on vacation, and I didn't ever mean to, like, stay probably for the rest of my life, but I am still here. And, you know, I think when people come, they have no idea the impacts it means by coming or by staying. I know that the whole world is getting crowded, but how do we revisit this? I don't know why there is not the courage to try and do the right thing.
Well, you can't blame any visitor that comes, you know, and you can't blame someone who moves here. You have to step back and look at the public policy, which says which way do we want to have things on a global basis happen in the future. And it's a difficult problem in that we've become so tourism is an important, it's the important mainstay of the economy. But once that infrastructure has taken on a life of its own, first of all, it sucks all the oxygen out of the room in terms of alternative portions of the economy. And secondly, it's difficult to imagine how to change the economy to emphasize other parts of the economy. But on the other hand, it gives us actually some ways out of this, because what do you do when you have too much demand for a product? You raise the price. What does Disneyland do when there are too many people that want to go to Disneyland? They raise the price of admission. And when there's so much demand for so much growth in tourism on the island, much more than we need to meet the job needs of people on the island, it would make sense to basically somehow raise the price of that and use, whether, and there's multiple ways to talk about doing that, but, you know, increase the real property tax structure on tourist accommodations, get state permission to increase the transient accommodation tax rate for the island of Kauai, put taxes on certain other things. But get that tax revenue, number one, by increasing the price of being a visitor here. It will slow the growth in visitors. And number two, properly allocated, that revenue could be used to hopefully charge up other parts of the economy, invest in other parts of the economy.
Well, after the hurricane, we didn't have visitors for almost 2 years. And it's not that I don't love visitors. I have a lot of love for the visitors, but it was actually really nice. It was, and the pressure was off, and I think the thing that makes it so expensive to be here is that, you know, it's like whether you're renting or buying, it's like living in commercial space. Mm-hmm. It is just an absurd cost for housing because the demand is so high.
Yeah, well, there's multiple reasons for that. But one of them, actually, since we're talking about tourism, is that when you increase the number of visitors, that requires more and more jobs than local population can fill. You're encouraging more people to come here to fill those jobs and take up local housing.
Well, and I would say a lot of those jobs are people that they're jobs that people don't want. Like when I look at who fills the hotels, a lot of the cleaning jobs, not all of them certainly, but a lot of them are people with immigration visas from Southeast Asia, and the people who tend to have the tipping jobs very often are people who have moved here and they don't have a sense that, you know, they're just stoked to be here and they're happy to work doing whatever because they're energized simply by being here. And you're listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea, the station that loves you. This is Felicia and Marshall with Kauai Soapbox. Carl Imperato is our guest in the studio right now, helping us evaluate the general plan update and some of the choices. We have a caller. Aloha. Thank you for holding. You're on
the air. Hey, how you guys doing today?
Good.
I just wanted to say that it's just like a Babylon system or whatever, you know, system itself in general, or the systems that have been around for millions of years. Well, I on my own am raising a family. I've only been here about 15 years. I'm guilty as well, but at the same time, I'm a landscaper, and then I just see what's going on. So I just want to give my input. So there's these new construction companies that come here because they have millions and they want to make money, and they go and build an $11 million home. And who are they trying to sell that $11 million home to? Only people that would move here, like you're saying. And there's a lot of people that are moving here and buying these type of homes, and they are all sent, you know, coming here from there and putting all their, they love it here and this and that. And yeah, we have a lot of issues with basically communities and then people that are so wealthy and things that are so ridiculous that we don't even get to make sense of it. It's just going to happen because there's so much behind them. There's so much wealth. There's so much power. There's nothing anyone can do besides go, man, look at the system and look at what's going on. And I'm saying this because for 5 years I kept the maintenance for that construction company, and someone bought, I was very happy because they'll pay me more money than the construction company will to take care of it, and the place is in rough shape and needs a lot of help anyway. And then I make a little more money, but I feel a little guilty.
Right.
Because, you know, like in the end, you know, like I'm saving them. Everyone else would have had to pay $5,000 a month. You know, and they're saving a lot of money through me. And sure, I'm, you know, but all I have to say is that there's a lot of people coming out here, and they did this 10 years ago, and they came out here with a lot of money, and they see business, and it's all business is basically what I'm saying, you know, and they just come out here and they do this, and then boom, and they just buy it and do it and market it for these people that will come out here and buy it from Los Angeles or for Hollywood or from wherever. And then basically everyone else is going to have to play around these people because these people are going to get some leeway. They're going to get some strength, and the police are going to protect them and everything.
It's tough.
The property, last thing I wanted to say, all the property taxes go up for all the locals.
Right. It's like Kauai's becoming.
That's all I wanted to say. You guys go ahead and continue now.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Aloha.
I just wanted to say that we all need to do what we can to recognize exactly what is happening and then say, okay, there needs to be a law, or has to be something, or has to be a tax for the local people. Amen.
Okay. Thank you so much. Aloha. Aloha, you're on the air.
Felicia?
Yes?
Question, has there been a projection of the threshold or breaking point when the designated visitor, tourist, arrival, development areas, or the coming wave of Airbnb hits the fan? Because the thing that concerns me is I moved here in 85, and I hate to be negative, but I'm just going to tell you how I feel. Every year, it gets worse and worse. The quality of life, Pawaniki, with all the rich Howley folks or whoever moved in, it's just gotten worse. And yeah, it's great to have Costco and Walmart, et cetera. That does help the pocketbook a bit. But the thing is, I remember back in 88 when the state had so much money, they were going to give every state taxpayer $800. And they were projecting a monorail around the center of Kauai to alleviate the transportation issue. So I don't trust the politicians. I think there will be a point where there'll be some horrendous emergency services issue with all these folks. There might be a tragedy. There might be a natural disaster. But I just don't think these people are thinking through clearly, you know, the event horizon when, you know, I mean, like the second law of thermodynamics is such that, you know, the larger, the more complex the institution or the situation, the more it tends to break down, right? So I hate to be, you know, take a negative point of view, but I just think that these people are not thinking clearly. Thank you.
Thank you. And we're going to hear from one of our events that are coming up for just a moment, and then we got another caller.
Ma'alie Foundation and the County of Kauai present the King's Celebration and Parade 2017. Ho'okahi ka'i lau likeana, wield the paddles together, honoring Kauai's ocean voyagers. Saturday, June 10th at 9 a.m., the fabulous floral parade starts from Bedina Stadium. Ho'olaula'a at the historic county building. Full pa'u units, floats, both walking and riding units. Crafts, food, Hawaiian cultural demonstrations, and entertainment, including halau. The King's Celebration and Parade 2017 in downtown Lihue, Saturday, June 10th, 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. More information at 635-7205.
Always a lot of beautiful events happening. And we have another caller. Aloha. Thank you for holding. You're on the air.
Aloha. Thank you so much. My name is Anna, and everything that you're saying is so valid and true, and I appreciate you guys making a show for the whole community to really understand and grasp what's happening. I wasn't at the general plan today because I was at the county council where there was a company, Sire Land Development, that was asking to upzone into the visitor destination area. And I thought it was peculiar that they were trying to get that done while the general plan was in motion at the Planning Commission. Basically, it did pass, but there was two council members that, out of their principles, decided not to vote for it.
Who were they?
And I feel that there is something that we can do. It is not too late.
Which one said no?
What's that?
Which one said no? I'm curious. Which two said no?
I mean, that'll be for the record. That'll be on the record. Like, if you look, I don't know if I want to.
All right.
I don't know. I feel uncomfortable saying names because I really do feel that the entire council is a great team, and that if we step forward and show face of support in numbers, because basically the company was saying, well, nobody's really shown up to say anything, so what we're doing is great and the community loves it. But the truth is that I did show up from the beginning and state how there is economic disparity caused by exploitation, that it's showing up symptomatically as drug and alcohol abuse, homelessness, domestic violence, crime, suicide, and all of that will just get worse. And although there's efforts to put a Band-Aid on these gushing wounds, the fact of the matter is that the blood will still run unless it's cured at the root of the cause. So what we can do, which was smartly said, and I have stated for the record, that there should be a visitation tax. Even though the state took away the TAT, we within the county have the right to do what is best for the people in the community here, and we can establish something and change the laws, which is what the council members said, that after today, you know, they realize that the laws need to be changed. So the community stepping forward in numbers, showing that this is unethical use of the land, because within visitor destination areas, on Channel 6, which is a channel for all real estate sales, like that's all they talk about is what's for sale on the real estate. And I can quote you that they said, build your dream home and second dwelling on this one-acre lot in beautiful Poipu Beach with just a short walk to the beach and golf course. Poipu Beach Estates is located within the visitor destination area, so you have lots of options. Live full-time, part-time, or vacation rent your home when you're not using it. So I feel that we need to put a stop to this sort of exploitation of the land and cure the humanitarian crisis that is existing here, because the opportunities afforded to mainlanders that are coming in and buying a property and driving up the value of the homes are not equal to the opportunities afforded to islanders. Therefore, it is exploitation, and it's not allowed. So it's up to us to step forward and say that in masses, because obviously my testimony alone didn't help the situation. Maybe it did a little bit, but.
And you did call in last week. You did call in last week, I remember.
I did.
Yes.
I did.
So we were at the other meeting.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's always like two different things happening on the island. I mean, three with the Aloha Plus exchange going on today. So that's how, but I'm glad that I was there to see what is important and what does make a difference, and that is the amount of people that show up or send emails to testify, or I would like to compile a list of people that agree. Everybody that's listening to you right now, if they can call in and add their name to a list of, and an email and their phone number where.
So what email can you give for them to do that? You can give a email right now. What email would you like for people to email to and do that?
Well, I don't really have a business email, but you're saying to give my email address out?
Well, are you asking me to do it, to manage it?
I mean, sure.
I need to know more about that. And so I have a website.
I'm not like professional, but I'll give my personal email out.
I mean, because you're trying to create this, so it's very good, and then you can be a part of it.
Okay. So you would recommend my personal email?
I mean, I wasn't sure if that's what you were saying.
Does that sound professional?
Sure. I mean, like everything I do is just, you know, it's just me doing it.
Yeah, I mean, it's really just me.
Yeah.
And it's for the whole island, because we really do need to align the divine law, the sacred laws of the land, the laws of democracy, and the ethical practice of capitalism align perfectly. So there's no way into the future unless we have this convergence.
Is there a contact point that you're wanting to put out right now? If you want to, go ahead. And then I have people holding, and what you're saying is very important.
What I want to say is that there is hope with the general plan happening now. So send your testimonies to general plan.
It's called Plan Kauai. Plan Kauai, right? Plan
Kauai at kauai.org, .gov, I'm sorry. And please express how the visitor destination areas should be minimized until there's economic balance is achieved and we can all enjoy this island together.
Okay, thank you. Plan Kauai at kauai.gov, and you can also email counciltestimony@kauai.gov, because like what you're just bringing up is that was before the council, and
yes.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Aloha.
Aloha.
Thank you for holding. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks. While I was listening, it occurs to me that folks sending in their email testimony could also just CC DJ at KKCR, and that would be a way that we could aggregate and keep an eye on, be part of the conversation. But I had to call back because I want to make sure I understood what this one who just was speaking said. She said that at this other meeting that was happening at the very same time.
It was a county council meeting. County council meeting at the same time as the commission.
Thank you. The developer spoke, and then the developer said that since nobody else said anything, therefore they loved it, and so therefore it passed, because that's exactly what I understood the previous caller to say, that when everybody showed up and said how terrible it was, they said, yeah, but we have to balance that with the testimony that we never heard, because some people might feel differently. So does that make any sense to you? Because I'm so confused.
Well, I mean, what I think is the case is that the situation of trying to manage these things is like fighting gravity, and it's overwhelming for the people who are appointed or elected. And
yeah, but I mean, is it down or up, or is up down, or is down up? Because if I'm not mistaken, the same identical reasoning was used to achieve the exact opposite results. Both of them being in favor of the development community, which is largely, well-financed off-island interests, and then the people who live here who are just trying to get by. So how can it be that the same reason that is used to shut up the community is the very same reason that is used to elevate speculative finance and development that the island has no capacity to bear?
Right. We are in a real conundrum, and what we are seeing is the bias is always sliding in favor of the developer, and I think that Carl hit the nail on the head when what happens is people who work for the county, you know, they get a pretty modest salary, and as they get competent and good at it, they tend to get picked off by the developers and the attorneys who represent the developers. And so when you have volunteers, which is what it is when you have a commissioner, appointed commissioners, and when you have people who are maybe still developing their skills and they're facing off against somebody who's not only a lawyer but a former planning director, they get a little outgunned. And there's a lot of dialogue that goes in the background. So thank you for calling attention to that conflict that's there, and that we are hearing either way the argument goes, whether they are hearing from the people or not hearing from the people.
Heads I win, tails you lose.
Yep, that's how it sounds. So thank you so much for calling that in.
Well, thanks for this wonderful conversation. I imagine that this is exactly the kind of conversation that people everywhere on the island need to hear.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And you're listening to KKCR, Hanalei KAQA Kilauea. This is Felicia and Marshall with Kauai Soapbox. And right now we are discussing with Carl Imperato basically that tension between development and the visitor industry as came forward today in the Planning Commission with the general plan update. And we've had, you know, just had a caller in also talking about something similar at the county council. Thank you for holding. You are on the air, KKCR. Aloha.
Hi, you're... Aloha. Are you there?
Yes, I am. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. Is this Felicia?
It is.
Oh, hi, Felicia. It's John Montemayor. Hi,
John. Hello. Can you speak directly into the phone?
Yeah, sure. I just wanted to say hello to you and your counterpart that's making the radio show come alive and for the community of Kauai.
Thank you.
And how I think everybody should appreciate you folks' hard work and diligence to make the show alive so that everybody has a topic of discussion.
Thank you so much.
But other than that, yeah, you folks are doing a great job. I'm not tuned in as far as what you folks are talking about, land development or et cetera. Mm-hmm. But like anything else, I mean, there's controlled growth, there's uncontrolled growth, and I think the people of Kauai have to realize what's best for not only themselves, but for the next generation of their family, because what are you going to do? What's the answer? I don't know. Here's the answer. So we just have to work together and just be friends about it.
Okay. Thank you so much for sharing that perspective.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Aloha.
Aloha.
So, Carl, I want to pull in a bit of what we were hearing from the generational community, particularly the Hawaiian community, and what Rupert said particularly was pointed to me as he was speaking about, and it's just so true, and because I've been, like last week I had the folks in here from Wailua. You know, they literally, when they're building cocoa palms and what they're doing there, they're literally in a graveyard, not a long time ago graveyard who nobody knows who was buried there. They're in a graveyard of, I don't think that ali'i should be more important than maka'ainana, you know, the royalty. Why are they more important than the commoners? But it is like a royalty graveyard and an unquestionably profound cultural site. And what we've seen with that property back there, which I had only learned in researching for the last show, that's actually state land, 14.834 acres of state land that's being leased to what's called the Cocoa Palms LLC for $5,900 a year. That is so cheap. Excuse me. It's like $6,100 a year, and it is valued at $5,900. So the taxes that they pay is about $100 less than I pay on my home on homestead rate. So for about $7,000 a year, that land has been held for 25 years now in disrepair. And I have sat at different commission meetings where they keep extending the entitlement, for when that means extending the ability for them to say this is going to be a hotel. This is in a tsunami zone. It is in a high traffic congestion area, and they don't even own the land, you know. And that's the thing. I was just blown away. I almost felt like crying when I saw that. And I invite you to help a little bit, Carl, because you're so smart. when I looked at the lease. I have it in my briefcase. I brought it. You know, it's supposed to be whenever there is an assignment of the lease. Like, they're not supposed to be able to reassign the lease without a Board and Land and Natural Resources approval. I saw that there wasn't even a land agent through the Department of Land and Natural Resources, or he was not well or something like that. The property wasn't managed for a number of years. It has changed on the assignment, and this was a speculative investment, and a lender who purchased it from another lender who was able to get that. And I just am shocked that we would prioritize gambling, which is what that is, basically, over our most important community, which is our Hawaiian community. And it is most important because Hawaii wouldn't be Hawaii without Hawaiians and without the Hawaiian culture. And Rupert was so correct when he was saying, you know, they just go through, dig up, and just deposit these bones into a mass grave, and they're literally right on the edge of, you know, burial. I mean, like tennis courts.
Yeah. Aloha, Felicia.
Hi, Marshall.
So we had a listener call up and ask if I could relay an idea.
Okay.
So let's see if it could work out. It would be a tax and a law that protected local property owners from having their taxes increased when someone buys a expensive
house
piece of property.
To
yeah,
them.
That actually his proposal was that any property that cost over $1 million would have a $10,000 tax attached that would go to the local community.
I'm looking at Carl. I don't know. You know, like a lot of times, like what would be, that's kind of complex. I mean, it sounds simple. The answer is sort of complex on that.
I don't know about the last portion of that, but you know, we did have something like that in the past when we had the rise in property values in the late 1990s and the early part of this century.
Yeah.
The county council passed something that's like Prop 13 in California, which basically limited the increases in the property taxes for owner-occupied properties.
It was called a cap, yeah.
Right. And that also ended up applying to qualifying rental property as well. So there was a dual tax structure there that said that if you owned your property and lived in it, you wouldn't see your taxes go up by more than
2%,
and then they changed it to the consumer price index. But anyway, that cap was there. And a number of county council members, really did not like that. I recall going to the county council at least three separate times over the years where Councilmember Bynum, Councilmember Yukimura wanted to basically see that eliminated. And in the end, a few years ago, that was eliminated. And what happened is property taxes, for example, in Hanalei on resident-occupied property went up over 80%.
Yeah, some went up like $30,000 in a year. I mean, I saw a lot of that. I saw a woman whose kids had grown, and so she had rented a couple rooms out just to be able to cover the cost, and hers went up $18,000, and that was in Kilauea. When they took the cap off, there was this huge rebound piece. What did happen when they had the cap on is seniors were able to be holding onto their place, but then young people pretty much couldn't buy into that same situation.
Well, that's one of the things that if you're going to basically say that you're going to basically base the property taxes on what you paid for the house, for example, rather than what on the person next door paid for his or her house 5 years later, then you are in some sense creating an advantage for someone who's lived in the house for a long or who's stable. But on the other hand, the other way to look at it is when some new person buys a house, you bought your house for $500,000 or $300,000. Now the house next door is selling for $600,000. They pay $600,000 for the house. A few years later, the house next door to that is going to be $900,000. And so they're still getting the benefit of keeping their taxes based on the $600,000 price that they purchased the house for. But You know, there's no tax system, property tax system, that I've ever run across that can solve all the problems. But the one that basically said we're going to basically base your property taxes based on what you pay for the house was one that at least created stability for residents. And unfortunately, that was eliminated. As I say, I did the research for at least Hanalei, and the average was an increase in over 80%. Now, subsequently, because of that problem, they instituted another kind of cap, not a cap on property taxes, but a cap on how fast the assessed value of your property can go up. So it's sort of, you know, after the horses were out of the barn, they basically, put this back in.
They have the homestead thing. You can have a senior discount. You can have a low-income discount. And that said, now is the time to take your taxes into the county planning. If you've already done your 2016 taxes, you can take them into county planning and show them that you are low income so it can work. I think you have to have it in by October.
Yeah, I don't know the date, and it's probably the tax assessor's office rather
the
than
ta- excuse
not,
me.
Not the planning department.
Did I say planning?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. You were right. It's the tax assessment. As you go in, it's on the right. As you go in kind of just before the Department of Motor Vehicles, and now is the time, because by the time you get your tax assessment, it's too late.
Mm-hmm. You know, going back a few steps to the discussion about the Cocoa Palms and some of the others, development and all, striving to find, it's always generally a question of balance. How much development do you want to allow? Because, indeed, as long as local population continues to grow, and it's projected to grow at about 1% a year, some of that due to influx and due to tourism and all, but there's still native population growth. As long as you're going to have population growth, you need to have jobs, and so you have to have some sort of development, not necessarily more tourism development. But striking that balance and striking the balance on all these other equity questions, really in the end, is a question of political power. And so, indeed, 15 people could have testified today about the rezoning or the future status of the Princeville lands, and one developer could just basically signal with a wink of the eye from the back of the room that he is opposed to it. That developer has a lot more political power. And so unless and until the people who are concerned about these issues basically take a strong stance, and not so much with the Planning Commission but with the County Council, because that's where this general plan is going after it comes from out of the Planning Commission.
I've been focused with the Wailua people for a couple of weeks now, and we had them on the show last week. I mean, I've looked a little bit before, but when you look, like, before I went and looked, I really didn't realize how good their arguments were, how much quality good things are going on the property there.
Felicia, I saw your short documentary on what's happening on the Cocoa Palms property in Wailua, and that was powerful.
Are you meaning the piece with Kimberly Sousa?
Exactly. Yeah. We walked along with her, and, you know, I really had no idea of what is happening there until I saw that, and it was just amazing.
How did that make you feel?
It made me feel the passion and frustration and determination of Kim and her family, and the fact that they're up there just trying to live a very simple life close to the land. They've got their taro lo'i that they're reestablishing by hand, and they're not putting even a stake into the ground to avoid doing any more harm to the bones, including children's bones, that are all over the place and being heaped into piles.
Yeah, if maybe you can put that on my Facebook page and on KKCR's. I think we got another caller. That would be good for people to be able to see it. It is on Hoike. It's really powerful what is happening there. And what I saw, there's these young men that have the lineal descent qualities, and you look at their paperwork, it's compelling, and it looks like there's a lot of cheating going on, really, like that the compliance with the law, I haven't found it all yet, but it looks like these requirements haven't happened for the people, the developers to keep holding on to that land. And so we have housing and rehabilitation and hope going on the property there. So Anyway, Kim Souza, I really appreciated her being able to share that. We are at the top of the hour, so I want to say thank you for listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea, the station that loves you. This is Felicia and Marshall with Kauai Soapbox, and I have Carl Imperato in the studio with me, and we are talking about pressure on the island, and that came up today in the Planning Commission meeting as we're looking at the general plan update. So Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with the Copper Man. And second
KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ Anahola, K284AL Haleiwa.
The Copper Man. Copper, stainless steel, and galvanized aluminum. We specialize in ornamental and custom work and fabricate and install any kind sheet metal work, residential and commercial. Serving Kauai for over 30 years. We're still talking. HarryConti.com. That's HarryConti.com. Or 639-3456. PackYourTrash.org and SaveRCs.us.
Second Skin Organics Hawaiian Mosquito Shield. Safe and effective. Protecting you and your ohana since 2001. Kauai grown, GMO free, sustainable organic agriculture based solutions. Uamau ke'ea o ka'aina I ka pono. More information on their global mission and vision for Hawaii at secondskinorganics.com.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. We have our council member, Mason Chalk, on the phone with us. Aloha, Mason. Thank you for calling in.
Hey, aloha. Felicia, how are you?
Good. I know you've had a busy day today. You had the county council meeting. Why was it on Tuesday this week?
We have a WIR conference, Western Region, like the National Association for Counties, but this is the Western Region conference. Council member Kanashiro is our representative, and he's headed out today, so they moved the meeting to Tuesday so that they could accommodate his attendance.
I see. And so I don't know if you've been busy or if you've been able to hear any of what we're speaking about on the show right now.
Mm-hmm.
Have you?
I'm sorry, I haven't.
Okay. So I'll bring you up to...
The Planning Commission meeting is still going, and so I was tuned in, and I just thought I'd take a break and come out and see how I can... help with the conversation.
Okay, so
having.
We've been, and Carl Imperato is in here with Marshall and I, and we've been discussing the Planning Commission meeting, and Maka'ala did call in and tell us that they basically allowed Princeville Development to have its continuance of this resort potential on the Princeville Plateau, and that has also caused us to be discussing the pressure between seemingly unlimited visitor growth. Carl has been very good at being able to do the math on the general plan, and it has unrealistic baseline numbers and unrealistic growth numbers. And so we've had a number of callers talking about the pressures of coming in, and we've discussed the impacts particularly on the Hawaiian community and the generational community. You were at the council meeting while we were at the Planning Commission meeting, and there was tremendously good and very moving testimony from the Hawaiian and multi-ethnic generational community of what they have seen and the changes that have happened by just not really being able to manage that.
We have our tourism industry leaders who are agreeing with, you know, the fact that we're at capacity and the fact that we need to really plan well and really make some real hard decisions about how it is we're going to limit. I think the community's voice has been very strong in saying enough is enough. take care of our infrastructure needs, ensure that we have housing, ensure that the people who reside here are taken care of and considered first, and that quality of life is considered. And so it bothers me that, you know, a lot of times these situations are driven somewhat by, I guess, status quo or complacency to what the laws have structured, and our inability to work around them efficiently to really get to the core requests and needs of our citizens. So, you know, people in general plan is just one aspect of those things. I guess there's much more work to be done. You know, today we just had an item on the agenda, in my committee, at the planning committee, about the development out at Makuena Point, and
in Poipu.
The fact that this is in south, mm-hmm. on the South Shore,
mm-hmm.
and it is an Alaskan developer, and the development is intended to create profit for Native Alaskans, and which is kind of, you know, interesting, because, you know, Native Hawaiians haven't really gotten there yet,
right?
In terms of trying to
there's kind of some irony, you know, in that,
some
actually.
There's some irony in it, yeah. and you know, they really changed the face of their development in order to not follow through with our affordable housing requirement. So they didn't trigger the affordable housing requirement, because they, instead of doing 10 lots that they're requesting to go into the VDA, they're asking for 9.
And to avoid helping the community.
I'm sorry?
To avoid helping this community.
To avoid the stipulation of affordable, that it's triggered for affordable housing. And they did it lawfully. You know, they didn't, there's nothing illegal with what they've done. And yet, I think that we're behind the ball in terms of really, I guess, creating an environment where we don't take acceptance to those kinds of negotiations. You know, whether legal or not, I think that what we need to do is to really be very smart about how we're drawing the lines, or make it very stringent for development to take advantage of the people's needs, and not answering the people's needs.
And I just to kind of shift it for a moment, because I know that you're still essentially, you've just stepped out of a meeting, so I don't want to lose you, to go back before I ask these questions. You recently went to Okinawa, correct?
Yeah, I took my family, my parents, both my parents, on a trip. They've always talked about wanting to visit. We were able to spend about 5 days, three weeks ago. We've been back 3 weeks now, luckily my family, actually I had more than just my parents, by my sister and so forth, and I come from a family who, wherever they go, they want to learn about the culture and learn about the people, and Okinawa is very, very similar to Hawaii in so many ways, historically, and also in their current status and situation.
With the military occupation, with the damage to the reef, with this placement of the generational community, the indigenous community, is that what you're mm-hmm. speaking of that's similar?
Yeah, so I was able to really set up a intense schedule for us to, I don't think my family realized it, but to visit some of the professors from the local university and Okinawa natives who had reached out and said, hey, this is an issue for us here, and we'd like to share it with you. And so we went on called a huaka'i, a nice family excursion. We learned about the native forest, the Ambaru forest, that is being threatened, as well as the last pristine reef called Ora Bay in the area of Nago in Okinawa. And you know, it's interesting. I had known that Okinawa was sort of the one of the areas that the military has occupied, but I didn't realize how much of it, and I didn't realize its impact. And so, you know, being Native Hawaiian and seeing sort of the impacts of occupation of many sorts, a lot of the experiences and the stories that we heard, I think, was very impactful to me and my family. The Okinawans, you know, as many know, have struggled for generations with the, you know, the takeover from Japan, and then really the way it has played out is the national, you know, the government has really allowed Okinawa to be that that place for America to set up shop. And with that kind of military occupation, I think what the stories that we hear are pretty damaging and sad. I can recall one night, you know, we would have these days on the road and listening to different people. But in the evening when we got together for dinner, I mean, there was just sadness around the table and even crying, when we talk about and listen to, the stories of how their language was taken away from them and how they were oppressed and not being able to practice their culture, but more so how it's translated to them not even having a voice in the process. So there's huge activism happening in Okinawa in regards to the expansion of helipads in the forest, where they have for years utilized, used as a training ground, that has affected, native species, almost the extinction of the yambaru, and for the native woodpecker, as well as how it's displaced, the sea life in Oro Bay.
And when you're looking at this, like I watched a film, there's somebody, Katie Music really is, and with Kauai Peace and Social Justice, they've been bringing a handful of films over, and I watched the Okinawa, The Afterburn, and just showing how for Okinawa, it's like the war was never over, that they're still in that battle. And so we've done a handful of shows, and a couple weeks ago we did one. I had Kuhan Pike in here, who has Korean ancestry. She doesn't designate between North and South, but I'm just going to do it anyway. Her family's from the northern part of Korea. And so she had a lot of concern about the potential of Kauai having live militarization being, they call it defense, but activated, you know, activated with not just experimentation. I will say that the commander, Vinnie Johnson, said, no, they don't have a plan for a change. But like as an example of elephants in the room, I noticed on the general plan update, I don't even think there's a military section in there. Is there? I mean, I don't. It's like they're beyond reproach. They can do whatever they want. So when we're doing a plan, you know, it doesn't have the dairy in there. It sounds like the dairy is kind of maybe possibly being managed, but doesn't have the dairy in there, and it doesn't have the military in there, and it seems like, wow, are we having a serious conversation when we don't talk about the visitor industry, and then we don't talk about the militarization of the island? Have you looked into the potential militarization of the base? Do you know anything about that? Can you confirm or deny whatever's going on?
Well, I could neither confirm or deny. All I can tell you is that, you know, at our last NACO conference, which was in Washington, D.C., we visited our delegation and with the rest of the counties. And it was a question, particularly for Kauai, because we had heard that, you know, that's a possibility. And it's always been a possibility, but everyone is understanding of the current climate in the world. And so the question was asked. And I can say that all of our delegates were, you know, not really in favor of, you know, escalating our base to that degree. But they also said, you know, it's a possibility because of, you know, of the worldwide events, and that, you know, I think it would be difficult for them to not support it if indeed it was deemed necessary. So I get a sense that, like you said, you know, and like what's happened in Okinawa, I think that people just don't have a choice, or at least that's how it's being portrayed in terms of process. So, I mean, I think for Kauai people, and I appreciate your comment on sort of the general plan, because, you know, that's some of what the criticism has been. It's like, you know, shouldn't we be having these discussions that are very broad reaching that really will affect the face of this island, for generations possibly, you know, for our kids, and at least have discussions on them and come up with an understanding of where the community is. You know, in Okinawa, they've sort of lost that voice. They've not only been trampled on for generations, but as much as they've spoken, and they have politicians, their governor, their has spoken out, you know, completely against the occupation, the military occupation. But the Japanese government has just really ignored it. And you know, the fact is that's in another country. You know, I'm not sure if that would happen the same way here on this island. I would think that we would have much more of a say, an opportunity to speak to it, and not be covered up, because I didn't know any of these things happening in Okinawa. They're certainly not publicized and we don't hear about them, but
Mason,
the military, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Excuse me, this is Marshall. I was just wondering, when we talk about the militarization of Kauai, what does that look like? Do we have a sense? I think there would be live fire defensive missile capacity at PMRF, and we know that they want to do more helicopter training. And I imagine there would be personnel increase. Do you have a sense of how many more military personnel that would be? And then I imagine there would be more civilian jobs attached to that. Are we talking about a lot of military vehicles on the road? Do you have some sense of what it looks like?
Yeah, I have no sense of what it looked like. I know that, you know, again, drawing that comparison to Okinawa, which is more of a, you know, more of active operational base. I mean, they've taken up about 20% of the island's, you know, landmass, taken away pretty much, you know, about half of the agricultural lands there. So, I mean, I think anything is possible. And I think it, you know, a lot is dependent on you know, speaking out about how we feel about it, making some decisions about what it is acceptable to us, if anything is.
We see that,
so
like
anything could happen.
We see that, like, when the Air Force decided they want to do this target practice that will impact the whales, we had like a 2-week window to respond. The Osprey helicopters. Very, very short window of response. And, you know, it's, I see what's happening at, Pohakuloa over on Hawaii Island, and, Oahu is definitely has a very big military blueprint on it. And, it's a serious challenge. I kind of just scaling it up one more level. I watched President Trump's, talk in Saudi Arabia, and for me it was really surreal. I was happy to see a, you know, a coherent flow of dialogue, though, you know, I mean, it's easier when things are scripted, but I felt like I was really troubled by what was being said. You know, it was you know, it reminds me of a time before maybe World War II, you know, when we were talking about you know, $110 billion defense industry bargain with a country who is really pretty ruthless. You know, it was like pretending listening that ruthless actions haven't been happening, and that, you know, the people who are only at fault are the marginalized Muslims. I don't know. Did you see any of that?
No. You know, like I said before, that there's so many parallels that I saw, you know, on this visit with what we're dealing with here in Hawaii, and I think it has a lot to do with some of what we're experiencing in terms of activism occurring on a local level here. People not really being heard, acknowledged, you know, for a long time now. And, you know, I would hope that what we can do is to allow, at least recognize that these voices exist, that they mean something, that there has a history to it, or we will stand to kind of duplicate the things that are happening worldwide.
Yeah, there seems to be a cultural tone. Carl, do you have anything that you're sitting there looking thoughtful?
Oh, I wanted, it's not on the militarization aspect of this, but Mason, after the general plan comes out of the planning commission, it goes to the county council, and I assume it falls into your lap as the chair of the planning committee for the county council. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So I'd hope then that you would have the ability to create the discussions and enable them, facilitate them, that we haven't had to date. For example, with regard to tourism, there's been no discussion of how much is too much, how do we try to make sure we don't exceed a certain level, what do we do if and when we exceed a certain level. Those are key questions, and there's been never any discussion of that in any of the technical committees that the planning department's had. There's no discussion of that before the planning commission. And so the hope is that when this comes for the county council, which generally is more open and does have more back and forth between citizens and council members, that hopefully your committee will be able to address these sorts of things, because there's really very little planning that's been done in certain aspects of the general plan. The general plan's got, you know, some good concepts in there, you know, where they talk about trying to avoid sprawl by focusing new development, residential developments near existing core centers and all. But certain areas, whether it's tourism, the elephant in the room, or militarization, there's been, you know, no discussion at all. And I would hope then that when this goes before the county council, at least we have one last chance at trying to make this a plan that's based on planning rather than a plan that just basically has false forecasts and really no solutions for problems that are exist today and will be worse in the future.
Yeah, you know, I'd like to agree with you and disagree with you at the same time. You know, I think what's happened, especially with these, what happens with these plans are, they go through a community process with the CAC, and then, you know, and with the consultants that we hire, which is where, you know, the intention would be most of the work gets done, gets vetted, and that by the time it gets to the planning commission, that a lot of those issues that we're talking about and struggling with now, are vetted. Unfortunately, as you have mentioned, a lot of the community, or at least a portion of the community, is concerned that it hasn't happened. I believe it gets more difficult in some degree as it moves up the food chain. I'm certainly an advocate of having these discussions, but I'm only one of seven. So as the planning chair, what you can expect is that I would advocate for any area of concern that the community continues to have and provide those opportunities for discussion. I can't tell you that other committee members or the council as a whole is going to, you know, value that. I think that what I've seen and experienced at the council level is that, you know, comments such as, hey, this is the process. The work was done. This is really for us to just look at and approve and say yes or no. And so there's different thoughts, is what I want to say around the council. And I would urge, all of those that are concerned, with the plan and want further discussion that they start to reach out to other members. Nothing happens on this council or any committee, without everyone. We make decisions as one, not individually. In addition to that, I think one of the things that might be, worth, I guess, planning for as it may move to the council soon is for us to really be very clear about and create some suggestions on how to accomplish these discussions without it dragging on or just being deferred in this roundabout, you know, sort of looped, you know, agreement and disagreements at this juncture. And I think you've seen that at the Planning Commission. It's like there's lots of concerns. We submit the concerns. It's not good enough for the, you know, for certain people. And so we need to get to the place where either we start over completely or we make some difficult decisions on the plan and how it's being outlined. And so, you know, you can expect from me, as I said, that as much as possible, I want to have difficult discussions that will help define clearly what it is we want to see in the future.
And after this long period of community input and having the consultant and, you know, all of the hearings and meetings that have led up to the plan going to the council, at that point, how much power does the council have to make changes, even wholesale changes, or to reconsider some of the basic assumptions that the plan is based on?
Mm-hmm. You know, I think the council really has the power to do anything in regards to the plan. It could say, hey, this is not what we want, send it back, you know, to the Planning Commission and have the Planning Commission relook at it. But, you know, we all have to have very good reasons why we would do that, why we would reverse the process after such a long period where community engagement did occur. Now, whether or not that community engagement was done properly or people agree with the process is another question. But to undermine some of that, I think, is difficult politically for some members around the table. So it's really about belief. If they can't live with the plan, or if they feel like the plan is you know, well enough along, you know, anything could happen.
What about if the plan is actually in part based on some statistical errors? Like Carl was pointing out earlier, that it's based on projections of tourism growth that are completely out of sync with the reality of what is currently happening and what will happen if these rates continue.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, what we've seen is there's always two sides of a story, especially when even with science. those are kind of the kinds of conversations we need to have up front and open. I can tell you that my belief is that, and what I've heard, is that the planning department and the work that they've done, they feel pretty good about. They feel that it's gone, and that they've provided a good process for it, and that they see, they feel like it should be moving forward. So they have, you know, in their own ways, they've responded to some of the concerns that Carl has posed with the impacts of this plan on tourism. Or its lack of response to tourism with this plan. Those are definitely conversations I'd like to have in the open and at our planning committee.
And go ahead.
I was going to say that the three key words that Mason used here are conversations, engagement, and discussion. And my hope is that we'll have that because at least before the Planning Commission, I haven't attended all of the meetings on the general plan, but probably 4 out of 6. My experience is that members of the public will speak. There's not one question that's ever asked of a member of the public that speaks. It's like talking to a brick wall, and that's not engagement, that's not discussion, that's not communication.
And that's what's happening at the county council now, too.
Well,
both. There's not engagement with the public.
Yeah, not much. I mean, you know, this is a big part of the discussion on the rules that were adopted and how it was, you know, what was supported in terms of how we're going to engage the community so in public process and testimony. So I think there are some challenges to those rules that I think everyone has experienced. You're experiencing them at the Planning Commission. But what we could do is if there's some planning as it starts to move towards the council is to say, hey, this is what we'd like to do. We'd like to offer a different way of approaching, looking at this plan because it's so big and, you know, there's so many sectors involved in it. Is that perhaps we take each one and we do it in a workshop style. Now, that's something that would have to be adopted by the whole council.
And I,
you know, to move in that direction.
I tried to see who's
but
on the
certainly
planning.
not out of you know, the realm of possibility.
On the council planning committee, I noticed that the website doesn't really list who's on the committees, but I looked up each person individually. So Arthur Brune, yourself, Ross Kagawa, Derek Kawakami, and then Joanne Yukimura is the vice chair. Right? So Errol and Mel aren't on it of the larger council. So people might want to be speaking to either Arthur, Ross, Derek, or Joanne, perhaps. Though ex officio members, meaning the non-members, can also come. And you're listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea, Kauai Soapbox with Felicia and Marshall. On the phone we have council member Mason Chalk, and in the studio here, Carl Imperato, who is head of a lot of different things. So, sorry to make that so simple, but I appreciate your time. Can you? I know you need to go back to the Planning Commission meeting. Can you give us a synopsis? Did they come up with a decision on the youth recovery piece? Are they going to adopt the general plan update? I mean, that was actually on the agenda for today.
Yeah, I think the adolescent treatment facility, and I think that passed. I think it's out of the commission as of today. I think right now when I left, they were discussing the general plan and going over some key areas on the map that were very, I guess, consistent with public testimonies and public concern. Those included, and you've talked about them, you know, already with Princeville and
Kokua Place,
in Kapa'a, as well as, you know, moving on to the west side with A and B proposed properties there. So I think the planning director was interested in trying to get some of those big, really intense decisions out of the way. There was also a request for some of what Carl is asking for, which is sort of this opportunity for broader discussion and insight in terms of alignment of the plan as it relates to policy all the way through action items, that was made by some commission members. I thought I heard a motion for the establishment of a subcommittee to look at some of these sectors. You know, housing, transportation, and the sort, so that the commissioners can feel comfortable about the issues within these sectors and be able to, you know, add their own input as to what they'd like to see. It's such a big plan. I think I heard 1,700 pages plus, that it's very unyielding. And so, you know, my only request to planning commissioners were, hey, look, take your time. Make sure you feel comfortable with everything, and that is thoroughly done. Because from my perspective, as I said earlier, I think it will become more difficult as it moves to council to see more changes occur.
And Councilwoman Joanne Yukimura, who at one point, for people new to the island, was the mayor, she has really made that point very clear to them that the council will probably very briefly go through it, and that is very important that the state that it leaves the Planning Commission in be something close to the final element of it.
So you could see, if that subcommittee is formed, you could see, you know, deferral of this so that there's a continuance of an opportunity. But, you know, when it comes down to it, it's really about how people are comfortable with the plan. You know, agreement or disagreement on certain points.
Mm-hmm. So, I think something else that was really left off of it that I couldn't see much of is the criminal justice system and how many people go through our courts and our prisons. And, you know, I had some visitors. They say, oh, you know what, there aren't even any Hawaiians here, you know. And I said, well, you know, they are at the funerals, and if you go to criminal court, you're going to find them there. And, you know, they're in there for the most petty things, like either demanding their sovereignty, not having a safety sticker, camping, you know, crimes of poverty. And I think that that is something that I wish that there was a greater focus on, is looking at why life doesn't work for some of our people and why it seems to be dominantly are people who have been here for generations, you know, who's mostly in there, any race. But, you know, it's disproportionate. So we have some real challenges. But I appreciate you. I don't know if you're going back into the meeting. I'm starting to feel guilty for keeping you out.
No worries.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, the outcome is the outcome, and we'll do our best at every level, I think, to try and address those concerns. I think from the planning department's perspective, the question is, should the general plan cover broadly, you know, some of these issues that some would consider are state issues or you know, out of the county's jurisdiction. But the truth is, it's all integrated. So at some point, at least at the very least, there needs to be some recognition of what the core issue, the root issues are that we should be focusing on, no matter what, who's responsible for it, because we all are truly responsible for it.
Yes, well, thank you so much. Do any of you other men have some questions for Mason? I appreciate all that you're sharing.
Well, yeah, Mason, I do, actually, in a general sense. If we're talking about the growth in tourism and its impacts on the island, when you look at the general plan update as it is now, and what that would translate to over the years, are you comfortable with that vision of the island?
No, I'm not. I mean, I think you hear Carl calling for a moratorium on development in this arena, and I think that it's well worth a look at it. How or what you can do effectively within the system that we're in, within the confines of our constitution, not only state but federal, I think are another thing. So as much as I might disagree about the vision of the future, I think it's really around what kinds of things we can do to help slow it down, what kinds of things we can do to help empower us to be able to make more decisions on a local level on how it is that growth occurs. You know, and really just try and problem solve together with the community on it. So, you know, I wonder how much of those barriers that we've created just through the system and the society that we live in are really, can really be overcome at our level. I think that what we can do is be more creative at the local level and come up with some solutions. I think that the other aspect of it is I think that, and I think I've heard this before from the planning commissioners, is I think we need our state delegates and the state in general, the legislature, to be a lot more involved in what's happening here in Outer Islands, particularly in Kauai for us, as it applies to the tourism industry. Because, I mean, while we take care of tourism, we don't receive not even close to what it is we need in order to support the infrastructure and needs of this industry. And so,
yeah, and you know, a good place for people.
I would totally agree with some of what Carl is concerned about. And I think, I'm one of seven voices.
So Thursday morning at the Lihue Business Association meeting at 7:30 at Duke's in Kalapaki, right near the hotel down there on the beach, the four delegates will be coming each year at the end of the legislative season. They're there and they're speaking, and I mm-hmm. always go, and it is really a good opportunity for people to come and have that. And I hope that different members of our county government will come and be able to hold them to some of this need.
Carl, would you just clarify, did you actually call for a moratorium on visitor growth?
No. So what I've called for is a menu of actions to deal with the problem. To go back to your original question to Mason, you know, the general plan says that we've had 20, if you just look at the graphs that are in there, 25% mm-hmm. growth in the last five, in between 2010 and 2015, and then only 8.5% growth for the next 20 years. It makes no sense. And you would think that anyone that wanted to do some solid planning would at least, question why the plan thinks the growth rate's going to go down to 1/11 of what it has been. And number two, that they would have some proposals for dealing with the problems that would arise if that minuscule growth rate doesn't materialize, if it's a lot bigger. And so what I've asked for is, number one, just a broad policy statement that basically says it's county policy to discourage the tourist population from growing beyond the level that exceeds our infrastructure capacity, threatens the rural character, or degrades residents' quality of life. Now, it's hard to imagine why anyone would want to disagree with that kind of policy statement.
Well, except it almost does translate to a moratorium.
Well, no, because then you ask, now, what do I have to do to deal with that? And, there are certain ways that you can basically say, well, you know, we can handle a certain amount of growth by, moving from a car-centric tourism industry to more of a transit-centric one. So you could do certain things to mitigate the problems. But there's a whole menu of things that can be done to at least make things not as bad as they would be if we don't do anything. For example, again, as I talked earlier about, increasing some of the taxes on tourism to pay for infrastructure or alternative types of economic growth. There are things that we could do to help in the tsunami zones, for example, basically say that we're going to restrict tourist vehicles from going beyond Princeville. These are all difficult things to do. They can't be done unilaterally. As Mason's pointed out, some of these things require a strong state presence. But the general plan in many places says, work with the state to do X, Y, Z. But when it comes to these sorts of important issues,
we're silent.
Well, we can work with the state to basically, try to change the tourist accommodation, the transient accommodation tax. We can work with the state to basically ask the state to enforce the rules that they're not enforcing for illegal commercial activities in Honolulu Bay, for example. We can work with the state to ask the state to try to do something to make traffic more manageable on Kuhio Highway. So there are a whole bunch of things that can be done to make tourism, at least as it grows, more palatable. But again, if you start from the premise that, there's only going to be Manini growth over the next 20 years, you say it doesn't bother, it's not worth putting any energy into that. So, I think going back, you have to start with at least an honest forecast of what's going on, and I just don't believe that it's credible to say that growth's going to drop to 1/11 of what it's been.
Mm-hmm. And thank you, Mason, for being involved in this. We're almost at the top. I mean, we're getting towards the top of the hour. Jazz with John is coming up next. Do you have any final thoughts for us, Mason? I really appreciate the job you do.
No, I think just appreciate you folks for having the discussion. I think it's really important discussion that we need to all really engage in and get active in because these things just don't happen without that kind of participation. So I just applaud. Carl's always been the go-to guy for me in asking questions about his thoughts in these kinds of things. We need to gather all the resources we have available, to really get to where we want to. So, thanks for being the voice, for this, for the community. And, hopefully they can come out and join, those who are looking at this plan, this really important plan. I think that you will see it at the Planning Commission, for a little while longer. And so, to reinforce some of what Carl's concerns are and others in every sector, that there's about 20 you know, that we should be looking at is really to be clear about the policy statements we're going to be making and how we might be able to affect them for our future generations. So thanks so much.
I appreciate you so much.
Thank you, Mason.
Yes, thank you so much for calling in.
All right, you folks, aloha.
Aloha. Aloha. And you're listening to KKCR, Hanalei, K-A-Q-A, Kilauea, Kauai Soapbox with Mason. And, I mean, that was Mason Chalk, our councilperson, Marshall and Felicia, and then Carl Imperato. And you're still on our board, Carl. What is your role on the board? Are you president? What are you?
No, at this point, I'm just one of the members of the board.
One of the members
of the Kekahu Foundation.
Of the Kekahu Foundation. And the Kauai County, you know, is always trying to do good things. You know, it's a difficult job, and I want to applaud their recycling program, and let's hear what they have coming up this weekend or soon.
The County of Kauai reminds residents and visitors to recycle using the Kauai Recycles Drop-In Program. Recyclables must be separated into the following categories: plastic number 1 and 2 bottles and containers, aluminum and steel cans including foil and pie pans, glass bottles and jars, corrugated cardboard, newspaper, and mixed paper including junk mail, magazines, and food boxes. There are 8 Kauai Recycles Drop sites throughout Kauai located in Hanalei, Kapa'a, Lihui, Poipu, Loai, Hanapepe, Waimea, and Kekaha. Call the county for detailed location information at 241-4841. This program is not for commercial use. For more information, please visit our website at kauai.gov/recycling. Or again, call us at 241-4841. Help keep our garden aisle green. Recycle.
And mahalo for listening to Kauai Community Radio. So there is also a lot of things going on with the County Emergency Response Team. Marshall is part of CERT. I know that they had an event this last weekend. Marshall, do we have a caller?
Yes, we do.
Okay, we're going to hear about that. And then when we come back, can you tell us about CERT?
Love to.
Okay. Aloha, thank you for holding. You're on the air.
Hi, this is Anna again. I just wanted to call in after Councilmember Chalk because he was one of the ones that voted against the upzoning, the visitor destination area, and just to appreciate everything that he said. And he's a true member of the community. And I do agree that the Kauai Council does do great work and the community of Kauai does great work when we all come together. And I had read the Declaration of Independence today for the record to serve it be a reminder to all of us that it is within our duty and our right to make sure that the government is doing what it needs to for us. And if there's any changes that we need to make, we make them. And it was written against a tyrant king, but we're not experiencing that sort of tyranny. It's looking more like corporate tyranny that's manipulating situations here, and it's very much within our rights to change that. And as everyone expressed, we can. And Earth Justice what took to trial over the water rights, and if this needs to go to trial for this exploitation that is happening of the land and the people, then that might need to happen. If people aren't going to be listening and being graceful and coming to the table with solutions out of their own free will and goodness of their hearts, because this is about all of us, and we truly need to move into the future together without it being such a haste situation. So that's really just what I wanted to say.
Thank you so much. And Earth Justice, if you're speaking of the Waimea Water Agreement, that was mediated. So without going to trial in four years, they came up with something. And
this is what we're looking at here. It's human rights, and the exploitation is real. And we have a voice. Hawaiian people have a voice. We can all vote. We can make that change. It doesn't have to be like Okinawa, you know, where it was a different government. I mean, this is the United States of America that was founded for these reasons. And it's up to all of us to make sure that democracy is exercised properly and capitalism practiced ethically. If you take ethics out of capitalism or out of democracy, you have to call it by a different name. And the responsibility comes down to all of us to make sure it's upheld.
At this point, I'm probably a recovering capitalist, but I appreciate what you're saying. So thank you so much.
It's been misused, and it's given such a bad name. And to democracy also, people are upset about democracy. But we have to go back to why it was founded, and it was for our free will to be exercised and practiced. And
that's
that's
another conversation that we can go on deep on, I've done before. But, yes, so thank you so much. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. Thank you for all your work, all of you together. You're amazing. And I would be on the side of a moratorium, really, if the effect doesn't come into place and there's not true change in consideration of the community here. I mean, I wouldn't take that off the table.
Okay.
So thank you again.
Thank you. Aloha. Marshall.
So hurricane season is almost upon us. It starts on June 1st, and so it's time for everybody to think for a minute about their own personal preparations. The people who have the responsibility for preparing on a large scale have been busy at work. The Kauai Emergency Management Agency just finished a week-long multi-agency dress rehearsal for hurricanes and other disasters. And last Saturday, the Community Emergency Response Team had their annual refresher, and we practiced all of the skills that we will need to assist in responding to a large-scale disaster. And so now it's the turn of every individual and family to make sure that they are prepared to take care of their own needs to begin with in any kind of extended emergency situation, and to help the public understand what they need to do to prepare, what to expect, and some of the basic facts about hurricanes here on Kauai. The Princeville's Community Emergency Response Team is holding a Hurricane Awareness Forum on June 1st at 6 p.m. in the Princeville Community Center, which is just an easy stroll from the Princeville Shopping Center.
And, you know, I'd like to attest to the value of CERT, the Community Emergency Response Teams, because I'm a member, and even if the team is never called out, the training that's given to people is just valuable for dealing with any sorts of problems that might happen, handling your family, friends, and all. So when the CERT training is advertised in your neighborhood, please give a thought to signing up for it, helping your community, but you'll also be helping your ohana.
Yes, and then hey, for the couple of callers who called in and I answered instead of Marshall, I'm sorry I accidentally dropped you. So it might be one of them. I hope that with the CERT group that they are looking at how they do mobilize the visitors, and a lot of times the visitors who are not staying in a hotel or resort, they need the most assistance, because they may not really have any idea of what's going on. So that's a piece. And who we have in the studio here, too, is John from Jazz with John. And he is really good with the ham radio stuff, you know, and he's been a longtime piece of that. And KKCR is part of the emergency response element. So We have that going on. We have that there. I went to the lifeguard, speaking of emergencies, I went to the Lifeguard Association fundraiser last Sunday, and it was great. It was a very good program. I want to thank everybody who did come out, and Monty Downs and Andy Melamed and the whole team who do a lot to keep people safe. And I know that the community really does care a lot about our visitors. We just have to keep it in balance. And certainly it's usually the visitors who are the ones that are the most likely to have the lifeguards rescuing them. So, Marshall, thank you so much. When you did your CERT piece, did you guys talk about the visitor element?
Yes. We did. You know, Well, one thing is that one of the first things that we would do in a situation where our supplies weren't going to come in as they usually do is to get as many non-residents off the island as possible. But it's important to understand that there are by far not enough hardened shelters to shelter the number of people that will be on the island, including the visitors. So people need to know how to be prepared to shelter
themselves.
Yeah, shelter in place or in, you know, a neighbor's or a friend's place that is hurricane-proof. But apparently, and you can tell me more about Iniki, but apparently there were resort facilities that were used to shelter tourists, but that is not going to happen again.
And they actually sheltered a number of residents, and one of which was what's now the St. Regis, though, you know, that glass shattered and there was a big water problem, the water tanks upside, you know. It was really nice of them to take care of people, and the word was it felt like the Poseidon Adventure or some sort of disaster film as everybody is running around to different areas. Do we have a call that wants to come on the air, Marshall? We are almost at the end of the show. I did accidentally hang up on a couple people when Marshall was talking. All right.
Thank you.
Aloha, you're on the air. No.
Felicia, we had a listener who just wanted to express his appreciation for the program, and I want to express my appreciation for him, too.
Okay. Thank you so much. So we're just about at the end of our show. We can, if this caller comes on, they can come on right away, or they're not going to be on because we're just about to say aloha. All right, we're going to take them very quick. And caller, you're going to be on for 30 seconds. Aloha, you're on the air.
Thank you, Felicia, for everything you do, and Marshall, too. Who has the final word if these big developers can come and buy the land and then build on it? Who has a final say that they can? Say no.
Planning and then the county council.
The county council and who?
Planning department.
Well, don't they have any brains to just start saying no to these people?
There's laws that constrain them. It's like if you bought private property and you were going to build a house on it, and then people said, oh, no, you can't build a house after you spent all your money on it. So that's called an entitlement on the land. And so it is a big process. It's a challenging process, and it's not easy. Thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you for all your work. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Felicia, I need to pass on a quick comment. We had a PSA play about recyclables, and apparently the High Five redemption centers are, this according to a listener who called in, currently shut down except for Na Wili Wili.
Yeah.
So she wanted to mention that because apparently that contradicts the PSA that we're playing.
Okay, thank you. I have to listen closer. You know, I don't know that. I think maybe twice since they gave the 5 cent thing, I think twice ever I've ever gotten that money back. So, you know, my mind doesn't even really think about that. But, caller, thank you for being astute to that. And then I will talk to our office and we will fix that. So thank you so much because a lot of times you just can't even get that money anyway. It's just sort of another tax. So I appreciate you. Marshall, I appreciate you. Carl, I appreciate you. Hey, and you know what else, being on the board? I appreciate you coming in here. We can't take any more calls right now. I appreciate you seeing what it is like in here and all the lovely chaos that we have in live radio. Here's the county council report, and I want to say that it happened today, so it's not tomorrow. Normally, it's Wednesday.
Thank you, Felicia. Aloha. Thanks a lot, Carl. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Aloha.